Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, motorcycle, boat, RV, whatever it may be. The best in the business will take care of your personal business. And that is Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Look, you need insurance more than ever, and you need to have the pros in charge of it. They're the best. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Brandon Gowden joins us. He'll call the game with Northwestern and Penn State on Wednesday night. He called yesterday's Northwestern Maryland game, and he's now the new play-by-play voice on television of the Atlanta Braves. And just one of the great guys out there. We'll talk to him in about 6 minutes. Nathan Davis on Bucknell Basketball. Patriot League Tournament gets underway. And Joe Lenardi today. Now, if you're wondering, his counterpart, Jerry Palm, after yesterday, how far out do you think Jerry has Penn State now, Matt? How far out?
I'm going to say next four out.
They are at 38. Oh, that's right. I forgot the audience. I'm going to have to explain that. There are 36 at-large teams. Penn State would be 38. They're two out right now.
Okay. So they're still in the first four out, just went down a smidge.
They went down one.
Yeah. That's not as bad as I thought it was, so that's a good thing heading into this Northwestern game. Quad one opportunity, I guess.
Wisconsin, well, it is a quad one opportunity. It's not a, I guess. It is quad one.
Okay.
It's a road game against a team in the top 75. Northwestern's way in. Way in. Look, I've done this before. 2001, senior day. Ironically, the only game Bruce Parkhill ever coached in the Jordan Center. He was an assistant coach with Jim O'Brien at Ohio State. Penn State rang up a big lead at halftime. Place going crazy, big crowd. I remember I saw Michelle Boyd, wife of Mike Boyd, Penn State assistant coach in the concourse as I was going back to the broadcast booth. She says, "Hey, you know, we're in the NCAA tournament." And I said, "Oh, Michelle, I've got 20 more minutes of basketball here. Let's just see how it plays out." Because if Penn State won the game, they were a lock to be in. They were going to be 500 in the conference, the whole deal. So they were going to be a lock. And Penn State built a 20-point lead early in the second half. And our old friend Joe Crispin, whom you know I think the world of, kept firing and firing and firing and firing and firing, and he kept missing and missing and missing. And Ohio State cut it to 11. Then somebody for Penn State, and it might have been Joe, I can't remember, hit a three and made it 14. And they kept missing and missing and missing, and Ohio State came back, won the game by six. Like, ugh. Penn State had lost four of its last five games. They're going to the Big Ten tournament. They're in trouble. They beat Michigan. Then they beat second-ranked Michigan State. Then they lost in the semifinals. Got the 7 seed, beat Providence, beat North Carolina, went to the Georgia Dome, finally lost to Temple in the Sweet 16. So while yesterday was bad, and it was bad, I mean, let's not sugarcoat it. You don't score a basket the last 9 minutes and 16 seconds. That's bad. You're 7 for 27 in the second half. That's bad. And I feel awful for Seth. You are not going to hear any critical words out of this mouth about Seth Lundy. Okay? At all. look, the numbers speak for itself. He was 0 for 11 and 3 and 1 for 16 in overall. Now, who feels worse, you or him? What do you think, he's trying to miss? And you know what? And you know how much stock I put in Matt to shoot-arounds and practice. To me, practice and shoot-arounds, the key to me is, are they fouling up plays or are they fouling up defenses where they've got to repeat something because they're not getting it right? In terms of shooting the ball, I don't really pay much attention to it. Right? For the most part, I don't pay much attention to it. Because it's like spring training. You go 3 for 27 in spring training, 2 for 4 in opening day. What's your batting average? 500. Well, I can tell you after observing Saturday and then Sunday in practice and then shoot around, you want to know how many shots I thought Seth Lindy approximately missed in the 2 days? How many do you think, Matt?
I'll say 5.
About a dozen.
Okay.
Total. And he took tons of shots. Lots of shots. Everybody takes lots of shots. He maybe missed a dozen. Now, do I walk in there thinking, oh, he's not going to be good tonight? Of course not. I didn't even think twice about it. But he took the first few too far out, and he just never got a rhythm or a flow and just couldn't get it done. And Andrew didn't shoot the ball well either.
Been a tough stretch for him in particular.
Well, it's 2 games in a row. You know, he only had the 2 shots at Ohio State.
Right.
He played really well at Minnesota, so it's not that. It's been a week.
But it's a shame because Cam Winters stepped up in contrast to that the last 2 games and then been able to pull it off.
In other words, you're trying to get, see, is it possible to get all 4 guys at once? It would be nice.
Exactly.
Right, it'd be nice. I give Rutgers credit. You know, they stepped up defensively. There are a couple of squirrely things that happen where you're like, okay, which, you know, they kind of got away with, but that's we'll talk about that later. We got Brandon coming up. We'll hear from him in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing, they can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. 3 dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
All right, let's go to the line now and bring in not only one of the voices of the Big Ten, but now the new play-by-play voice of the Atlanta Braves, well-deserved, Brandon Gowden. Brandon, as I said to you last week at Ohio State, congratulations.
Thanks, my friend. I always appreciate it, and good to see you. Tracking you guys closely, obviously. Frustrating loss, I know, against Rutgers. And I'm sure we'll get into some of that bubble discussion, but it's that time of year.
Yeah, it is that time of year. You had Northwestern Maryland yesterday?
Yeah, and that was a game where
Yeah.
Senior day, you know, those things go one of two ways. Sometimes teams come out flat. There's too much energy. They're too amped up, and they can't throw in the ocean. Well, Maryland was the exact opposite. They could not miss. It was their best shooting performance of the season, and I really don't think there was any team in the Big Ten that was going to go in there the way that Maryland played yesterday and beat them. So Northwestern just ran into a buzzsaw.
I thought you made an interesting comment yesterday that in talking with the Northwestern people, or at least maybe it was a sense, that for the first time in the history of the program, they're sitting in February, they're in.
Yep.
Right? And yep. That maybe has relaxed them in a lot of ways in terms of maybe attitude, looseness. Is that how you viewed them?
100%. Yeah, Chris Collins said that. They're not, you know, now it's just all about seeding. They're in. They can't play themselves out at this point at 20-9 and 11-7 with some of the wins that they have. And when they made their only other tournament appearance in 2016-17, they kind of sensed that they were in the last couple of games, but they weren't able to breathe with the ease that they are right now. And plus, they know that they've been in the tournament before, even though it's only once. And now to have that berth secured, I think Chris Collins just feels like they're playing with house money a little bit. And you've been able to see that. In the first half yesterday, Maryland played unbelievable, and Northwestern was right there with them, just playing loose and making shots. And they just seem to be playing so much freer than they have in years past. And look, when they lost, who they lost, and Pete Nance and Ryan Young, story's been told many times this year, nothing was expected of them. And so now I think that they've kind of just taken this underdog mentality, and they've been riding it all season, and it's been a pretty good wave to ride for them here all the way as they'll go into the NCAA tournament.
What has Chris Lowry, the addition to the staff of Chris Lowry, meant to Chris Collins and Northwestern?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, that defense is, it's just night and day. And look, you don't want to say that the players and the buy-in and Collins had nothing to do with it. Obviously they do. They're all part of the same system here. But Coach Lowry, who has head coaching experience in his background, was a good head coach at Southern Illinois and then longtime at K-State under Bruce Weber. He's got a good pedigree. Defense has always been in his DNA. And here's a random fact for you, Steve. He went to my high school, Evansville Harrison High School, so that's even more reason to like Chris Lowry. but no, in all seriousness, he has been tremendous, and their defense has been as good as I've seen a Northwestern defense in my time covering the Big Ten. It's been fun to watch.
Well, if he's from that high school, he's got to be, come on.
Well, so, Steve, here there's one other Big Ten legend. I'm not a Big Ten legend, by the way. But the other one that went to Evansville Harrison High School, Calbert Chaney, of course, the Indiana
guy. All-time,
so there you go.
All-time leading scorer in the history of the Big Ten.
Yep. And so I did not break his record when I came along in Harrison. Don't worry.
Okay. I'm going to look that one up. I just want to, because you do not like to brag. So I'm going to look it up myself. But obviously, you keep a close eye on Micah Shrewsbury because the two of you go back a long way, back to your time at Butler. Obviously, yesterday was a tough day for Penn State, and let's give Rutgers credit. They fought their way and clawed their way back in and won the game. But when you look at a Micah coach team, and now you've had a chance to see him as a head coach in this spot, what have been your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's great. The thing that there was a time where I didn't know if he would ever get a head coaching opportunity. And you may say, well, what do you mean? He's only 46, 45 last year when he got the job. But there's some of those guys that become such good assistants and they don't. They're the guys that some people say, oh, they're not going to win the press conference. They're always going to be the assistant, never the head coach. So I was just thrilled for Micah when he got the job because being around him and knowing how much Brad Stevens relied on him for X's and O's and game prep, if Brad Stevens is going to think that highly of somebody, that they think that they're that good, then they can be a head coach. And I think what you see with Micah is he's just incredibly smart. We talk a lot during the broadcast about the plays that he draws up in key situations. But it's more than that. I just think he has a feel for the guys. He was always a great recruiter. Players just really always gravitate to Micah and like playing for him, and I think that there's a lot to be said for that. I know, I get it. Penn State fans, it's been, here we go again. Yeah, I understand. They kind of feel like they went through this and they've gone through this many seasons where they're close, but they can't quite get over the hump, and I'm sure a lot of the fan base is saying, well, here we are again. We're right there, got a chance at a bid, but we're stumbling a little bit down the stretch, and we might get left out. And I know as of today, they're either just in or just out, depending on which bracketologist you look at. But I would hope that that fan base says this is year two of Micah being there, and with what they've been able to piece together, I think it's pretty impressive. I do. And I'm a supporter of him. And I'm hoping that this team can get a couple of wins here late and get into the NCAA tournament. But even if that would not happen, I think you've got to look at this as it's year two, and they've got a really good recruiting class coming in next year, that the program truly is trending in the right direction.
Gee, I've done this job for 41 years. I never noticed the fans feeling that way.
Yeah. Preaching to the choir a little bit, huh?
I never noticed. Oh, my goodness. Because I think Jerry Palm has them at 38, which is, 36 teams get in, so he's got them two out right now. That was the last one I saw. I'm going to talk to Joe Lenardi later today, see what Joe has to say. But, when you look at, obviously, Jalen Pickett, right? You had a chance to watch him last week where he scored 21 second-half points. Rutgers did a good job. He did not get a shot off in yesterday's second half. But when you've watched this stretch run by him, what have you thought? Because you see everybody along the way.
Yeah, and look, I don't cover the SEC, and I don't cover the ACC, and I don't cover the Pac-12. I see Big East and Big Ten every week. Yeah. For my money in those conferences, and it would be hard-pressed to convince me that there'd be somebody else in the country that I'm about to say this about, most underrated player. And we get why he's underappreciated, and it's not fair. It's because he plays for Penn State, and it's just not seen as a high-power basketball school, and they don't get the national attention that they deserve. But, it's just silly to think that a guy like him is in the top 10 in the conference in all three major categories, points, rebounds, and assists. Only guy that can say that. He's obviously top five in the country in assists. I mean, he does so many things, and he does it with such coolness. I mean, he never is sped up. He always gets to a spot in the post and either somehow scores or distributes. It never even looks like he's breaking a sweat out there. He's just such a joy to watch. And above all that, you talk to Mike, and of course, Steve, you know this. You're around him all the time. I'm not. He's a good guy. Just a guy that you want in your corner, a guy that you want help leading your program. Just an exemplary kid. And so I hope, especially for Lundy and the other guys too, but for Jalen Pickett, I hope there's a tournament run here at the end of this and a chance to play in the big dance because he deserves it.
One last one. You live in the Atlanta area. Through a series of circumstances, you end up being the TV voice of the Braves. What is this moment like for you personally?
Boy, it's been a whirlwind the last couple of weeks. I grew up, as I mentioned, in southern Indiana, and people always were confused as to why I was a Braves fan. Well, Steve, you remember the Braves were on TBS throughout the 90s every day.
That's right.
I mean, every day. So yeah. I fell in love with Braves baseball, and I started playing baseball, imaginary games in my foyer, and I would run the bases. The bases were pillows, or the outfield fence was the couch in my living room there, and I would announce the games as if I was Skip Carey on TBS or the Atlanta Braves. And so you think about that being your dream job at age 7, 8, 9, 10, and then you fast forward now, 39, and able to get this job in a town that I've been living in for a decade. It seems almost too good to be true. So it's just an opportunity. Look, I've been blessed. I've had, so far, some wonderful things come my way, and this is another one of those opportunities that I'm just grateful for, and hard to believe we'll be going here in, 32 days, I think, is opening day, so it won't be too long.
And it doesn't interfere with your other work. is going to be about 100. I mean, Brandon and I already talked about this stuff, so it just doesn't interfere with. That's why I'm not going to sit here and pretend I've got this mystical. Okay, Brandon and I talked last Thursday about this, but it doesn't interfere with the other stuff. It fits seamlessly into what you're doing, and I think this is so good for you.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, football, the only month that's really affected is September. Yeah. And I'm trying to work through that now and see what that means. But everything else is good. And, growing up in Indiana, I loved hoops. I mean, we were just always around basketball. I played it growing up. So to be able to keep the basketball schedule like I am able to, that makes it just a win-win.
Well, it's a win-win for a lot of people because, you know what? I always love when really talented people are really great people. That's you, and I'm thrilled for you. So congratulations.
Thanks so much, Steve. I really appreciate it, my friend, and look forward to seeing you in Chicago for the Big Ten tournament.
Thanks, Brandon. Look forward to it very much. Thanks. Congratulations again. Brandon Gowden. He's going to do the Braves games. Yeah, I know we got Nathan coming up. One of my favorite Braves stories was when Ted Turner had the team, and TBS used to be WTBS Channel 17. And when he signed Andy Messersmith, a pitcher from the Dodgers, they signed him as a free agent. They gave him the number 17. They put Channel on the back. And they said, "What? You can't do that." He goes, "Well, that's his nickname." Take that off. He actually pitched a game that said Channel 17 on the back. That's Braves baseball on TBS. All right, we'll come back. Nathan Davis in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, let's bring in the head basketball coach, Bucknell, Nathan Davis. Nate, great to have you back on the show.
Steve, it's always my pleasure.
All right, so American, huh? Down the stretch, a couple times, and success a couple times. So what worked?
Well, I think, first off, it always helps when you shoot 29 threes and make 19 of them. You're probably
well, that's a great start.
And then, especially in the second game, I thought we did a really good job of keeping them out of the paint and forcing them to take contested jump shots.
I mean, down the stretch, I mean, American aside, that's not the only team you beat down the stretch. You were able to pick up some wins down the stretch and really were a 500 team down the stretch. Did a couple of other elements fall into place for you?
Well, you know, it's been one of the most unusual seasons, especially in league play, I've ever been around. Going into league play at one point in December, we were the seventh-best three-point shooting team in the country. And then we get into league play, and we just, for the first 10 games, couldn't make a shot. You can talk about all kinds of stuff, but we couldn't make a shot. We had one stretch in one game where we made one shot over 21 minutes, and another game we made 4 out of 33 over two games. And so it's kind of hard to overcome that. But I thought, like you said, down the stretch, we played the number one team, the number two team in the league, the number three team in the league, the number four team in the league, the number five team, the number six team, and the seventh seed twice, and went 4-4. Certainly played better, done a better job of taking care of the ball, obviously making some more shots, and defensively overall we played, I think, more consistently, and some of that comes from not the disappointment, not of always seeing it miss. Got us back on track a little bit, so hopefully it can continue moving forward here into tomorrow night.
How have you felt about Xander Rice and how he's been able to run this thing?
You know, I think he's done a tremendous job of improving throughout his career. You said about all the seniors have gotten better. And I think this year, especially in the struggle, like I said, it's been 25 years of coaching college basketball. I've never seen anything like I saw in the first 10 games with our inability to just make open shots and to be able to stay together and keep coming in every day and working. You got to give a lot of credit to those guys to the way they approach the game day to day.
But you know what? I mean, we go through all these advanced metrics all the time. I read KenPom. I don't know what metrics you read or whatever. But if you hit shots, that's it. That's the whole ball game right there. I mean, sometimes it's that simple.
It really is. Jeff Van Gundy says all the time on the broadcast for the NBA games, it's a make or miss league. It's a make or miss game. And typically you can look at a bunch of things, you know, and say, well, this is it and this is that. And at the end of the day for us, for the first, you know, 9-10 games, it was legitimately, we just couldn't make shots. I thought we were playing hard. I thought we were fighting. But, you know, it wears on you eventually. And we'd have stretches where it would really get in our heads and we would have breakdowns defensively, but it all came back to that. I mean, we shot I think, two for 19 in the first league game, and that was going to be the best we shot for about a week. You know, and you just can't. At the end of the day, it's hard to overcome that as much as you want to point to other things. But I think that we fought back. We've gotten a position we're in our league. I don't think there's a big difference between teams. Obviously, you'd rather be playing at home and you'd rather be a higher seed, but it is what it is. And we got a shot tomorrow to go down and win a game and see what happens next.
All right. So, did you, during that the stretch where you're sitting there or standing on the sideline saying, "What the heck?" Did you change routine? Did you do anything a little different? Or did you just try to stick to what, you know, how you practice, the routine of practice? Or did you make any subtle changes?
Well, you know, I think we did a little bit of everything. At first, just try to kind of stick with what we were doing, not make a big deal out of it. You know, you don't want to panic them and think the world's falling apart. But as it continued on, we tried to do some different things at practice as far as shooting. We started doing some more competitions throughout the day just so we could see it going again. Because even with the stretch when we weren't making shots in games, we were making them in practice. If you haven't workouts, we were making them. Oh. Just when the game started, we weren't making them. So we did adjust the practice a little bit, did adjust the during the day a little bit, and some of the things we did, tried to do some more individual competitions. Because our guys are pretty competitive to get the juices flowing that way. So they could see it go in, so it would carry over to the games, and has for the most part since then, and hopefully it will continue here moving forward.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because I started the show and I was talking about the Penn State game yesterday with Rutgers. And Seth Lundy's a terrific shooter, 45% at three for the season. Well, yesterday he goes 1-for-16 and 0-for-11 and three. And of course, naturally he's the one they circle. And, you know, right? So in practice and in shoot around over 2 days, and I was there at both. I said to Matt, you know, I asked him, how many shots you think he missed in 2 days? I said, about a dozen in 2 days. I said, do you think I walk into the game going, hey, he's going to miss 16? He's like, I don't think so. And you're the same way. You probably saw him bang, bang, bang. You're saying, okay, we're all right. And then the game starts and, like, you're not all right.
No, it's unfortunate. It's human beings. I mean, we were showing clips of them making them throughout the year. We were doing all kinds of stuff. And, you know, part of we're trying just to stay confident, but eventually we had to go back, and let's approach it a different way. And like I said, it's a weird game. It's not a fair game sometimes, but everyone's got a chance, and we're looking forward to getting out there again tomorrow night and giving it a whirl.
Were there any points along the way where it affected your defense?
Oh, yes, no doubt about it. I thought really through the first six or seven games, our guys did a remarkable job of it not. And then that we had about two games, especially the first time I thought you really could see it clearly affecting us was at home against Holy Cross, and the next game at home against Navy where we were winning, and then, like, legitimately we couldn't make a shot. We made one shot in a 21-minute period of the game, or 21 minutes of play. We made one basket, and that you could really see it take a toll on us and what was going on the floor.
Down the stretch now, what have you seen in that defense?
I think we've been more consistent with it. I think for the most part we've done a better job of keeping out of the paint. And two of the games at Boston U in the last, 8 minutes, I should say 13 minutes in the first, 7 or 8 minutes against Lehigh, I thought we didn't defend very well. I thought we lost some concentration. But other than that, I thought we'd done a pretty good job of that and paying attention to detail, being more physical, rebounding better. So all that's encouraging. Yeah, we got to do a great job for 40 minutes tomorrow to get ourselves a chance to advance.
How'd you feel about the performance against Lafayette and the 10-point win Saturday?
You know, I thought we did a lot of nice things. I thought that we obviously shared the ball. We had 20 assists on 26 baskets, which is something we need to do. We hadn't. One area I'd been a little concerned about was we'd been making more shots, but we had a lot fewer assisted baskets than you would expect with that. But we had 20 on 26 baskets. But I thought the best thing I saw that came out of it was we were winning most of the game. We go down one, they throw in a three, kind of a prayer three to go down four, and we come right back and get to the foul line, take them to the rim, get a stop, come right back, get another basket in the lane, and very simple stuff to tie it. And when we were struggling, it would have gone the other way. We started pressing, might have forced a shot, we might have fallen asleep on defense, things like that. And to see us bounce back like that was very encouraging.
In the psychology of the game, what would it mean to get out to the lead on the road against a team that has lost six in a row?
You know, I think you always want to play from in front, then behind. And fortunately, against them in the last couple of games, we've been able to do that. But the one thing I know in 25 years plus years of coaching is, especially in tournaments, there's going to be ups and downs. and you better be able to respond quickly. And if you don't have a major run going one way or the other, you're in trouble. So we got to have short memories. We got to play the game possession by possession. What happened in the last few games won't matter. What happened in the last couple of possessions doesn't matter. It's about that possession right there, and that's how you win these games.
They're a different tempo team than you are. I mean, they want to ratchet the tempo down. Now, obviously, you have to hit shots, but what's the key to playing a team that would rather play at a slower pace than you do?
Sustaining your defense. I think a lot of it is about the physical effort, the mental effort of concentration and not falling asleep, because they're counting on you falling asleep at some point to give them an easy basket. With the wind, the way they play, you can't get back cut. That's one of the ways they get easy baskets. You got to make them use stuff. You got to try to keep them in front and contest shots. And offensively, you can't bail them out. You don't want to go down, you know, and take a quick one that's kind of questionable.
Yep.
8 or 10 seconds in the clock, or all of a sudden you play defense for 40 or 45 or 50 seconds of a minute. You want to make sure that you're getting the shots on your terms, that you're taking quality shots, and that you're not falling asleep defensively, making them earn it.
I mean, because their average possession length is over 20 seconds, which is, for, I mean, that is deliberate.
Yes.
I mean, and what does that mean for concentration on your part? Because they know they're going to have to play that length of defense.
Yeah, that's a big thing, because you get out of position a little bit and you give up a layup. Or you get out of position a little bit and you give up that, you know, that late clock three. And after you've been guarding, you know, for 24, 25 seconds, when you give up those shots, it can kind of be a gut punch. And so being able to sustain it and pay attention throughout the possession so that when you get that in the last 5 or 6 seconds, you don't fall asleep. And they've got to take a tough shot. It's a big deal.
I mean, you know, it's a possession-by-possession game because you've coached postseason games throughout the course of your career, and they're all big to you. Is there a little bit different approach from a coach's point of view when you get into these possession-by-possession games as opposed to maybe how you'd feel about a game in December, even though that's also possession-by-possession in your own mind?
You hope that you've done enough throughout the year that it's not anything new. At the end of the day, you're talking about in November, every possession matters. You're talking about December, every possession matters. So when you get to this point, it's not something new. It's a goal throughout the year, so that you're playing freely, you're not playing tight. Because like you said, it's a one-and-done game for everybody. It's a one-and-done game for everybody. You better play well going in. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how you do it as long as you win the game. It can be ugly. It can be pretty. It can be I'll say to these guys, in 10 minutes we watch film, we can drop kick it in from the other end of the buzzer. It doesn't matter as long as you find a way to win.
Do you utilize timeouts different when it's a one-and-done game?
I think you have to. I think you've got to try to limit runs. And so in that respect, you're a little more less conservative about it. You've got to be smart about it with your team and try to use them to limit runs.
Nathan, I wish you nothing but the best of luck going down to Bender to play this game. And I really appreciate the time you gave today. I always enjoy it.
All right, thank you.
Nathan Davis, head basketball coach at Bucknell. Speaks highly of you, by the way.
Well, thank you. It was fun. Another fun season at Soika. Wish we had more, but maybe they'll give us an exciting run on the road.
Hey, they've already beaten American twice. Now, you can't take that for granted. Can't take that for granted. You just got to go and take care of it.
Exactly right. And I actually feel pretty good. I think Saturday's game was big, just for a confidence standpoint that you talked about with him as far as the shooting goes and things like that. I'm feeling pretty good about tomorrow. I really am. I think this is probably the best matchup they could have gotten to start off the league tournament with the way they are right now.
All right, we will take a break. Joe Lenardi on the show today. And we're not going to bury the lead. We're going to ask right away about where he has Penn State at this hour, because these things are going to change on a nightly basis. And Joe really he's fabulous with this. I mean, really, I give him a lot of credit. The accuracy with which this turns out with all the time, you know, because you need to think, you need to put your thought process aside. You need to attempt to think with the metrics that the committee thinks with. And Joe does that plus Joe's just a good guy. So Girardi and I have known him forever. It'll be great to have him on the show, and we'll get a read as to what he thinks. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back more in a moment. Great to have you with us today on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right. Barrett Salee, who's been on this show before, was writing an article today about Florida State Clemson. You know, this expansion, this roulette when it comes to where people are ending up is always interesting. Because people like expansion, they like movement, you know, they find it interesting, how big will the conferences be? And I've been maintaining most of the time that the movement, except for maybe an SMU or San Diego State, is over until then we get to near the end of the decade and some of these contracts begin to run out. Big 10, Big 12 after that. Right? And the SEC will still have a long way to go at that point. The ACC contract, and the Pac-12, their contract would probably be 5 years. You know, that's if they can ever get one. We'll see. For the moment, it sounds like when you read or listen to other presidents in the Pac-12, they are trying to stay together. I mean, they're obviously looking at their options if they don't, you know, if things don't work out. But, like, what are the options? Well, then there's the comments made by the Florida State Athletic Director about, hey, you know, we can't continue this way. Right? They're going to, you know. So now you're starting to get people saying, not Florida State, not reporters, but you're getting people saying, you know, this is going to end up in court. And end up in court to do what? It would be a very short trial. Right? You're sitting there and, right, you hold up, you're the ACC, and you hold up the five, I think it's only five pages. I think the ACC is five. Big 12 is eight, or the other way around, whatever. They'd hold up and go, is this your university president's signature here on the bottom? Yes. We rest. We're done. Gotta go. Don't want to waste the court's time. You signed it. You signed off on it. Okay? Carolyn Egan, Florida State's Vice President for Legal Affairs and General Counsel, said during Friday's meeting that the exit fee would be about $120 million. All right? I mean, that's where, you know, good luck to you. Texas and Oklahoma finally got it to 50 and got out. But they're not going to get out. They can't afford it. Okay? And this idea that, hey, if they go to someplace else, you know, they'll get more money. Mm-hmm. Really? They will? They're going to get a full share right away? No. I mean, my goodness, Maryland's still not to a full share yet because they've had to borrow against the exit fee they paid the ACC the first time. Rutgers isn't even close to a full share. I think it may be 2027, maybe 28. I mean, that's... The problem is they can't get the grant of rights number to go down until they go X amount of years where gradually it will go down. I mean, Texas and Oklahoma had to wait for the number to go down in the Big 12 before they negotiated their way out. You signed it. I mean, like I said, you're going, is this your university's president's signature on the bottom of this document? Yes. We rest. And why would ESPN want to renegotiate it? Why? They're sitting there already budgeted as to how much money they're giving the ACC and what they're putting into the ACC network. Why do they want to renegotiate it? What are you, a fool? You're going to look around and go, oh, geez, we might lose them. Whoop-de-doo. That's good. We'll just take the money and put it into the NBA. Okay? Television is not a bottomless pit. It seems that way. But it's not, and you can tell now by the layoffs that have happened at Amazon, the layoffs that have happened at Google, the layoffs that have happened at Disney. Guess what? They're starting to think, look around saying, hey, look, we need live sports, no question about that. But we have to be smart about which live sports we're going after. I'm not going to renegotiate the deal with the ACC. No way. They're looking at them and go, hey, we're locked until 2036. We have a contract. We have all these signatures right here. Ding, 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 ding. What are you going to do? Sue us for having a legal contract? You signed it. And we're running your ACC network. Okay. All right. Nathan's point about, that's why I asked him. I said, was there a point where your offense affected your defense? Because his team was missing shots. And it relates back to last night's game between Penn State and Rutgers. As the game went and Penn State's missing shots and getting frustrated and missing shots and getting frustrated and missing shots, it started to affect their defense. Idealistically, that should not happen. And it is, yeah. But the bottom line is, there is a bottom line to this. And I know they've got a tough week coming up. They're at Northwestern, really good. They've got Maryland at home Sunday, really good, then the Big Ten tournament. Yesterday hurt. Yesterday was not an elimination game. It really hurt. Don't get me wrong. I didn't go home and do cartwheels yesterday. Hey, that was a great 32 minutes that they led. Wow, I feel great. No. I went home and I was disgusted like you were. Okay? But it wasn't the last game. It was not an elimination game. So guess what? You go to the next one. And I know Brandon did yesterday's game. I guess, you know, for the most part, Northwestern played decently in the first half, but they really have not played great for 60 minutes now. Because the second half against Illinois, they did the same thing Penn State did.